Hello, hello, and welcome to That Garden Show. My name is Shannon.
And I'm Harmony.
And we're glad you're with us for yet another episode.
Today, we are going to be discussing our top 10 garden essentials. It can be kind of overwhelming when you first start getting into gardening because you've got, when you're doing research, you've got a lot of different things coming at you saying you need this, you need that. But really, it doesn't take a million different things. But the things that we're talking about today, we consider essential in that they really do make it a whole lot easier for you when you do garden. So Shannon, what are some things that you would consider garden essentials?
Yeah, so obviously we need sun, water, and a media to plant our seeds in, right? I mean, those parts go without saying. But one of my absolute favorite garden essentials is chicken wire. I use chicken wire around my raised beds as a fence. I've also used it before if I want to cover a freshly planted area to be sure that the squirrels can't get into it. And then if you want to do floral decorations with stuff from your garden, or you know, you need other things at the bottom of a vase, chicken wire is great for that as well. So I think chicken wire has a lot of different uses, and it's a really important piece to my garden.
Yeah, so I know that I use it in my garden. One of the things I use it for is for the bottoms of my compost bin. It doesn't really do too much to keep anything out, but it helps at least when you're first starting that compost. And then it also, I've used it for leaf mold before. So I don't have to use an actual bin or anything. I'm just creating kind of like a cylinder to put the leaf mold in to kind of keep it in one place so it doesn't blow all over the yard.
That sounds really smart. I know my sister also uses it for her tulip bulbs. So you make sure the squirrels or the voles aren't trying to dig them out. You can make a cylinder in the ground around your bulbs, which is a great use too.
Oh, that makes me think, because I had a lot of issues with squirrels digging up my sunflowers this year. So that is a really good idea. I think I might do that for my sunflowers.
It could definitely work. I wonder, you'd have to let me know how that goes. Harmony, my second favorite item in the garden is bamboo sticks. Now, I don't know about you, but about midway through the pandemic gardening season this past summer, I was in a dire need for a trellis. My butternut squash had taken off, and I realized I wasn't quite prepared for how large the plants would get, and I needed a trellis so bad. And I went to all of the big box stores. I went to all of the local little stores in small, wonderful small businesses, and I could not find a trellis anywhere. So what I was able to do was find a 50 pack of bamboo sticks at a grow supply store and then make my own trellis. So I love, I love bamboo sticks because they have a lot of different uses. You could make a trellis if you needed to. You can obviously stake your tomato plants and any plants that need staking. And then I actually use bamboo sticks as a pole for my fencing with my chicken wire. So I just put it into like a little U-hook that's on the side of my raised bed, and then put the bamboo stick in there and then attach the chicken wire around that. And it makes a really good temporary fence for me. So I love bamboo sticks.
Oh, nice. Have you ever seen, I've seen a couple of people do this where, not in person, just online, where they've put a couple bamboo sticks in the ground and then they've kind of tied them off at the top and they've used it to create like a little clubhouse. So they'll actually grow like beans or whatever around the bamboo sticks, and it creates like this fun little playhouse. Have you ever seen that?
I have seen that on Instagram a couple of times where, yeah, it's kind of like a green bean trailing up to like almost a teepee shape. Yeah, those are really cool. The third item I have on my list is a true trellis. Like I mentioned, with vining plants or your gourds or your squash or your pumpkins, there are even cucumbers. There's so many different plants that require it's better for them, in my opinion, to get off the ground. You can maximize your space better that way. And also it kind of helps with keeping the fruit a little bit more fresh or the vegetables more fresh. So I love a true trellis if you can find one. The great time to buy them is right now in the off season. You can oftentimes find them on sale. And my personal favorite is those really cute decorative arches. You know what I'm talking about, Harmony? Some people make them out of the cattle panels, or they can buy them that way. And it's like this really cute entry to people's gardens. That's my favorite kind of trellis, but I don't have one.
Yeah, I like those. I know I have, I bought a bunch of cattle panels and some T-poles with the intentions of doing these cute arched ones. And then I ended up doing something different. But yeah, that is my plan for next season, is to add in one or two of those arched trellises with a, using the cattle panel and the T-post is the most cost-effective way to do it. I mean, you could go out and buy one that's already pre-made, but you know, $20 for a cattle panel and, you know, another $10 for the T-post and you're set. So, I mean, for me, that seems the only way that I'm interested in doing it.
Yeah, I think a trellis is important. It might not be important your first year gardening. And honestly, I went 2 or 3 years gardening without a trellis. But the more I get into those vining, trailing, larger type vegetables and fruits, you know, you really need them. Like the squash, I don't think I could ever grow squash without a trellis on my property.
Yeah, if you're only growing lettuce and tomatoes, you don't need one. But any of the other bigger things, I mean, you can even use them for things that maybe aren't traditionally trellis grown.
And then the next item I have is a garden hose. Obviously, we need the hose because we need the water for the garden. But I'm not just talking about the hose itself, but also a way to store it, whether that's the rolly cart or the attachment piece for your house. And then also a good sprinkler head. I really appreciate the long-handled sprinkler heads because when you're watering your garden, you do not want to get the foliage wet, and it's really helpful to get in underneath the foliage when you have that longer handle. But just a full hose piece, the hose, the place to keep it, and the sprinkler head.
Yeah, and I think Shannon and I have talked about this before. You know, being able to use a hose and bring it to different parts of your garden is, I cannot tell you how important that is. When I first started out and I was using a watering can and having to lug water all over the place, definitely really, really glad that I have a good garden hose that stretches the length of my garden now.
Yes. I mean, obviously getting a automatic watering system would be even another level up from that. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, you need some kind of hose with a solid sprinkler head on it.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then the last item on my side of the list is a good pair of garden gloves. Now, for me, that's more like a good 3 or 4 pair of garden gloves. You never know when you're going to need them, where you put them down last. Sometimes you need a more heavy-duty glove because something you're working on is, you know, a little bit more just rough. And then sometimes you want a glove that fits a little bit tighter on your hands so you can really get in there as if you were using your own hand to do the digging or something. So for me, it's a couple different pair of gloves. Truthfully, I prefer not to use gloves when I'm gardening, but there are certain tasks that require that hand protection.
Yeah, I used to be like a, you know, I'm not like other girls type thing with gloves. Like I felt like I don't need it. I'm, you know, I don't mind getting dirty. But I think the first time that I broke out because I was pulling weeds and I just had a rash up both arms, I was like, oh, okay, I need gloves. Like, I'm not too good for gloves, and I will wear gloves every single time I weed now. So
yeah,
I hear you there.
Tomato plants specifically, for some reason, they leave me a little itchy. Like, I don't break out or anything serious, but if I'm doing a lot of pruning in my tomato section, I definitely can tell that, you know, something is on my hands or my arms.
Yeah, I only get that if I touch my face with my hands after I've been touching the tomatoes. Like, my lips will get tingly.
Yikes. So, Harmony, what were the garden essential items on your list?
The first one I had is boots, and I know that a lot of people garden in just, you know, regular sneakers or flip-flops or whatever you're wearing or whatever. But I think for me, I really like being able to have a separate pair of shoes that I wear these out in the garden. I don't have to worry about, you know, getting them dirty because they're made for that. So I actually have these, they're Slogger brands. I got them at like Tractor Supply. They're not fancy at all, but they're adorable because they have these little bees and flowers all over. They're so cartoony, and it's something that I would never actually wear like out in public. But I just, they're so fun, and it's, like I said, it's something that is totally separate from anything else I wear in the house. And so I don't have to worry about tracking anything in through the house, you know, mud, dirt, whatever. But I'm able to, you know, hose them off if I get, you know, DE on them, or if I spill fertilizer or anything like that. So it just, yeah, and it makes it so much easier for cleanup.
Yeah, I don't have a specific pair of boots for the garden, but I do have like my outdoor boots. Truthfully, I'm more likely to be seen barefoot in the garden. But yeah, if I'm working with DE or some kind of chemicals, you definitely need your feet covered.
And the next one that I have is sun protection. And that is another thing that I used to think that I didn't really need. But as I get older, the importance of skincare is more important, I guess. And it's something that I'm a little bit more focused on, a little bit more worried about. So I definitely think having a barrier, whether it's a physical barrier, it could just be a sun hat or, you know, actual sunscreen on your face, you know, in the back of your neck and your arms, because sometimes we lose track when we're out there gardening. It's a lot of fun and we can lose track of the time and realize we've been out there for 5 hours and now we're sunburned.
Yeah, I have to wear sunscreen almost anytime I leave the house. These Dutch jeans, they don't help me very much in the tan department.
Yeah, I'm pretty pale too. So, you know, I say, you know, in the garden, but I all the time. It's a staple. All right. And the third thing on my list is pruning shears. So I use pruning shears for a couple of different things in the garden. I use them to prune trees. I use them to cut dead plants. Not so much that, just because I try to stay away from the deadheading, but there are some things that I do like to cut back, especially if it's a diseased plant. Cut up garden waste, anything like that. At the end of the season when I'm pulling plants and cutting them up for the compost bin, I try to use those that doesn't need to be in there. And at the end of the season, when I'm pulling different plants out, I like to be able to cut them up before I put them in the compost bin. And there's three like main different kinds of garden shears or pruners. There's anvil pruners, there's bypass pruners, and then there's the parrot beak pruners. And they're made for different things. The parrot beak more for like flowers. And then the anvil are more for like the woodier plants or the trees. Whereas the bypass, those are more for like intricate cutting and stuff like that. So different things are made and used for different purposes. But I am kind of one of those people that I just use an anvil pruner all the time just because I feel like it works better. Even though I know it's not made for everything, I use it for like an everything pruner.
Yeah, I don't know which type of it sounds like I have an anvil by your descriptions, but I just use my one pruner for everything. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it makes it simple when I know that I get overwhelmed sometimes when I have a million different tools. Like I don't, in my kitchen, I don't like to have, you know, a million different one-use tools. I like to have like multi-tools. So having three different pruners just for me seems like a little bit overkill. But if that's where you're at and you like to use different pruners the correct way, I guess, that's okay too. So the next one is the wheelbarrow. And if I slip and say wheelbarrow at any point in time while I'm talking about this, please forgive me. I grew up in backwoods Hicktown, Pennsylvania, where I didn't know it was actually spelled wheelbarrow, and I pronounced it as wheelbarrow probably until I was like 18. So I'm sorry, guys. It might happen. But this one is pretty important. Now, if you have a patio garden or if you have a single bed, a wheelbarrow is not going to be that big of a deal for you guys. You don't need one. But if you're moving rocks, if you're moving mulch, if you're moving compost, if you're doing like Mel's Mix and you're making your own soil, then it's definitely it's going to be, you know, your saving grace there. But if you have a smaller garden, then it's not a real necessity yet either.
Funny story, Harmony. I did not think I needed a wheelbarrow until one day I built two more beds this past season and I had dirt delivered. And because of the way the wires are with the house, they couldn't get the the dump truck into the backyard to be able to dump it by the beds. And so they had to dump it in my front yard, and we had to literally wheelbarrow by wheelbarrow get these 7 cubic yards from the front yard to the backyard. And that wheelbarrow was key.
The last item on my list is really, it's any kind of hand trowel. I specifically, and I think we've talked about this in a previous episode, I really like using a hori hori knife. But any trowel is going to be really beneficial. And the reason for that is anytime that you're doing, you know, planting, transplanting, if you are moving, you know, small bits of soil or anything like that, it's going to be helpful. But the reason I like the hori hori knife is because it has a serrated edge and it's sharp on both sides, but it's still concave, so you can dig with it. But it's, like I said, it's more of a multi-tool, so I can use it for multiple different things. So I can use it to actually cut stems. I can use it when I'm weeding and digging into, you know, I have some really difficult clay soil, and it's a lot easier to use that because it's actually sharper than it is a traditional trowel.
I'm a little old school, Harmony. So when you say a trowel, you're talking about like a hand shovel, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So that sums up our top 10 garden essentials list. And that means it's time for party time.
Our first question comes from Juicy Leaf. She submitted this on Instagram and she wants to know, how do you get big mums and do you have to deadhead them?
Sure. Great question. So when it comes to mums, it is important to deadhead them. If you're not cutting off those spent flowers, the plant doesn't know that it's still time to shoot up some more blooms. So definitely make sure you're deadheading them. As far as, I think she wanted to know about getting them to be a perennial and come back year after year. Sadly, I don't have experience with that. I buy my mums when they go on sale at the end of the mum season. And never even really plant them in the ground. I just like them in the pots and then pitch them into the compost at the end of the season. But what you can do is make sure that you're bottom watering your mums, if at all possible. Obviously, if you planted them in the ground, you can't do that. But bottom watering is important, and also making sure you protect them from rain and the overnight temperatures, especially lately where it's been really warm and then really cold again. It's important to kind of bring them inside and let them get a little bit warmer in the evenings so that they're not as shocked at those temperature changes. So Harmony, next question's for you. Why does the pH in your soil matter?
So the pH in your soil matters for a couple different reasons. It's going to affect your plant growth. So it's going to affect your soil bacteria, nutrient availability, your soil structure and all that stuff. So if we kind of backtrack just a tiny little bit here, the pH it's a measure of how acidic or alkaline your soil is, and it's on a scale of 0 to 14, with 7 being neutral. So most of your plants, the ideal range for the pH is going to be 5.5 to 7, but there are exceptions to that. So like blueberries really like acidic soil. Those are actually going to be like a 4.5 or a 5.5. And then asparagus likes a more alkaline soil with like a 6.0 to an 8.0. So it's a little bit higher than even like the traditional ideal range for pH. But the pH is not indicative of your fertility. So if you have a higher or lower, it's not going to make your soil more fertile or less soil. But what it will do is it will affect the availability of those nutrients in the soil itself. So say you have blueberries, which likes a more acidic soil, and you try to grow it in a in soil that has a more alkaline, then it's not going to do well. It's not going to be able to absorb those nutrients, and it might have actual nutrient leaching and things like that. So you want to make sure that you're testing your soil, and you don't want to test it in one spot and call it good. You have to test it in different spots, because different spots of the yard are going to have different pHs. So I know for me, I have a pretty acidic soil. So my blueberries do really great, but then I actually had to put in raised beds because the rest of my plants I knew were not going to be great. And the ones that I did experiment, since this was the first year at this house, they did okay, but I had to add a lot and amend a lot, and I know that they could have done better if the soil was better to start with. So you are putting yourself at a disadvantage if you are not checking the pH and then either amending or trying to change that in some way.
How do you check your pH, Harmony?
So there's a couple different ways. You can submit it to like your local extension office. So like Michigan State has a local extension office, and you can actually send in a soil sample and they'll test it and they'll do a complete profile. I think it does cost maybe like $15 or $20. Or you can do what I did when I moved, is I just bought a kit. Ferry Morse has a kit, and it's just these little vials, and you put a sample of the soil in, and then you add water, you shake them up and you let them sit, and then depending on the color of the water, it will tell you what your pH levels are at.
Nice. That sounds like a smart idea. And then it sounds like we could have a whole episode on pH, but just one more question about this. Do you suggest doing it first thing in the spring, or, you know, obviously you want to have time to amend your soil if you need to. So when is the best time to do that pH test?
To do the pH test, definitely anytime that the ground is not frozen. But if you're doing a pH test with the intention of then amending, then the best time is now. Is any time is it's always a good time to amend your soil, because if you wait until spring to start adding lime to your soil, for instance, it's going to take some time for that to really make an impact. It's just like building compost and creating soil. It doesn't happen overnight. So now is the answer. It doesn't matter what season you're in. If you can do anything to amend your soil, whether it's more alkaline or acidic, I would definitely recommend trying to do it while you can. And our next question is, what are plant hardiness zones and how do I find mine?
This is a great question. I think finding your hardiness zone is one of the first things you want to do before you start, if you haven't started gardening yet. Knowing what zone you are in is going to help you understand what things can thrive well in your zone and what things maybe aren't the best fit for your area. Basically, all a hardiness zone is the range of climate conditions for your space. So here in Michigan, we are a 6, or in lower Michigan, we're a 6. And here on Southwest Michigan, we're specifically a 6B. Because we're tucked a little bit by the lake, we just get slightly different weather than maybe people in the middle of the state or on the eastern side of the state. But there's 13 hardiness zones, and they are here in North America. If you live somewhere else in the world, I know that there might be a different way that you keep track of things there. But yeah, zones are important. You can find them on Almanac or on Google. Just look up your city and state and hardiness zone, and it should pop right up for you.
And I do just want to specify, these are created by the USDA. So if you specifically Google in USDA, what's the word? Hardiness zones. That's what you want to, look for, just because they have changed over the years. And so if you just blindly Google, you might get an outdated version.
Oh, good to know. So then, Harmony, our next question is, what is good to plant in a kid's garden, and when should you do that?
Gotcha. Okay, so I'm going to answer this backwards and answer the when part first. And the when really depends on what hardiness zone you're in or where you're at in the world. Because when it's spring for us, it might be fall for you. But I would definitely say spring is the easiest time to start planting, just because everything is starting to warm up, everything is growing, and you're able to kind of translate what you're doing in the garden to the rest of the world around you. So, you know, the trees starting to bloom again, the grass coming up faster. If you have any, you know, flowers or anything else that you have growing, it's a really good way to impart that this is part of like nature, and this is how the rest of the things in nature are going to grow as well. But for what I would plant, anything that is going to give your kid some kind of sensation, whether it's a tactile feel or it's a scent or it's just something that is pretty, I think it's going to be really good to let them grow and experience. Because if they can have fun with it and they can enjoy it, then it's going to be something that they're going to want to continue. But if it's a chore, if you're planting foods that they hate, they're not going to be interested in it. Some things that I would recommend are radishes, for instance, because those are really quick and they grow in about 30 days. Another one would be carrots. Same thing. They're not as quick as radishes, more of like a 90-day process here. But I have never met a child who didn't like carrots. And it's fun for them to be able to see that process of a food that they do actually enjoy. So like beans, kale is another good one, because those you can just keep picking and picking. And as it grows, it's kind of cool just to look at. Mint is a really good one because it has such a great scent, and it's one of those, just it's another way for them to experience something in the garden. And then the last two that I would recommend, lamb's ear. I would recommend that just because it's so fuzzy and it's fun. It has that tactile feeling, just for them to be able to enjoy. And then marigolds, I would say marigolds, because they do have a very strong scent as well. And I think being able to show your kid that it doesn't have to be something that you eat to grow in the garden, that it can still have a benefit, and to kind of show them how, you know, different things in nature work together, I think is a really good idea.
Harmony, you mentioned lamb's ear. I have a bit of a funny story. I was at my sister's house earlier today playing with my niece and nephews, and we found some lamb's ear in their yard, and my niece didn't know what it was, and so I explained to her it was lamb's ear, and that sometimes it was used as a Band-Aid back in the day, and she really stumped me. She said, how do you stick it to yourself? And I'm like, well, you have to wrap other stuff around it, but I was not prepared with an answer.
Oh, I think they just used to get them wet, right? Like they'd get it wet and kind of slap it on there and call it a day.
That's the thing. I've never tried, so I didn't have the answer. Okay.
Yeah, we might have to Google that after the show.
Right? And then we do have one more question, Harmony, from Rob in Wisconsin. Thank you so much for writing in on Facebook. Rob has a rubber tree named Roberto, which I think is a great name for a rubber tree. And
oh, it's the best.
Yes, totally the best. And he wrote asking, in respect to winter coming and needing to water the plant less, he's aware he needs to water it less, but how much less? I'm going to write you a message on Facebook, Rob, but my suggestion would be to go all the way down to about once a month, maybe twice a month. It is important that you don't overwater, and it's also important that you're paying attention to how close it is to any drafty windows. That's where I really struggle the most with plants in the wintertime, is the draft from my windows. So keep those two things in mind, and I'm going to send you some more information back on Facebook. But congratulations on being a houseplant dad. That's so awesome.
That is really awesome. I just wanted to say, since we're talking about houseplants, I have had my first casualty this winter. I don't know what happened. The rest of them are fine, but I have one that has just decided that they don't like the light or the temperature or whatever it is that I'm doing, and they have just decided to give up. So if you guys have experienced any houseplants that have given up or given you issues because it's starting to get colder, please send them to us, because I need to feel better about my houseplant casualty.
Oh, Harmony, I lose at least one every year. I mean, hopefully not this year, but it's true that especially like what we've been going through this year, where, you know, we had those colder days and then we had that big burst of 70 degree weather early November.
I know, it was so nice.
Yeah, our plants are really confused, as are we, so, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what to wear.
Well, that wraps it up for this week.
Well, thank you guys for listening. Be sure to check us out on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, at That Garden Show. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star review.